Support comes from Coors Core Fitness, a medical fitness studio providing personal training by certified trainers for those challenged with medical issues from chronic illness, post-rehabilitation, weight loss, and general fitness. They provide Parkinson's exercise classes in numerous facilities throughout Greater Cincinnati. These classes focus on Parkinson's symptom-specific exercises. More information from Coors Core Fitness at 513-233-2673 or at CoorsCoreFitness.com.
Welcome to HealthScope on WMKV and WLHS. Each week at this time, we bring you updates on a different medical topic and open the phone lines for you to join the discussion. Now, HealthScope on 89.3 WMKV, 89.9 WLHS, and online at WMKVFM.org. Very good afternoon to you, and thank you so much for listening. Yes, we are bringing you HealthScope live this afternoon, and I'm Robin Carey-Allgaier, your host, and I am so pleased to introduce to all of you Dr. Ryan Hill. He is a doctor of audiology, and he's with Hill Hear Better Clinic. Now, before we start, approximately 20% of Americans, or 48 million people, report some level of hearing loss. But, in comparison, only about 1 in 10 ever seek treatment. I thought another interesting statistic that I found on the Hill Hear Better Clinic website was that 60% of those that report some hearing loss are still in the workforce. Ryan Hill, welcome to HealthScope today for the very first time. It's great to have you here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah. And I thought we could start, I'm going to tell a little bit about you. You started out at UC and got your audiology degree. You went on to Ohio State University.
The other way around.
Yes, you know what? You
no
tell
problem.
Your story. I won't make it up. You tell what really happened in your life.
I don't mean to correct you on the radio, but
please do.
I went to Ohio State for my undergraduate degree. I did that in speech and hearing science as kind of a fallback because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. My father has been an audiologist for over 30 years now, and it was something he kind of suggested, not really suggested, but had always kind of offered to me if I wanted to go into his field. It was about 6 years down the road of working full-time after my graduation doing something else that I decided I needed a change, so I went back to school and got my doctorate degree and started working with my father and haven't looked back since.
Interesting. So you didn't accept the family business offer at first.
It wasn't really, I wasn't sure that's what I wanted to do. The option was there, but it wasn't anything that was ever pushed on me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something
mm-hmm.
I kind of came into on my own.
Well, neat. And now you love it.
I do.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's obvious. So now that we have your story straight, let me see if I can get the rest of the interview straight after this. And by the way, if you have any questions or stories to tell about hearing loss, new technologies, you can give us a call. This is a live call-in show today, 772-9658 or toll-free, 1-877-772-9658. Now, the Hill Hear Better Clinic, you've got three locations here in the greater Cincinnati area?
Yes, ma'am. One very close to here in Finneytown at the corner of Winton and Galbraith, another one in Montgomery on Montgomery Road, and then one in Batesville, Indiana.
Oh, okay. In Batesville, great. And you've got, you talk about the Hill Hearing approach, your clinic's specific approach to the work that you do. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we take it very seriously because we know how much hearing loss can impact a person. Well, not only that person, but also everybody that surrounds them, their job, their family, really just anything to do with their life and hearing because, communication is, my argument would be that it's our most important sense, or not sense, but form of who we are as people. So we just want to help to maintain that. So we, take the latest approaches in testing and fitting with hearing aids and any other, augmentative device that we can help with patients. I mean, even if it's a phone that can read the text out to somebody for a phone conversation, I sign those all day, every day, so that people can actually read the phone conversation when they have trouble hearing. So really just anything we can do to improve someone's life when it comes to hearing or communication.
So personalized in that you have to consider someone's ability to pay for certain technologies and what they do in their life, and like the 60% of those that report hearing loss are still working. That kind of surprised me. I mean, it shouldn't, because we are working longer in our lives, so I guess that contributes to that figure. But pretty challenging if you're at work and have had some significant hearing loss or any hearing loss and then still trying to perform the same.
That's for sure, and we hear a lot of patients that have difficulty just hearing in their everyday meetings, even something as much of a conversation as what we're having right now, just face-to-face at a table, can be straining for someone with hearing loss. Most of the time, those people that are still working are very well with it and able to get around and maybe even fake that they're hearing these types of things. But, you know, we don't want that. We want somebody to hear so that they can actively engage in every part of their lives, not just at work.
Well, it could result in problems at work in performance also in how your performance is measured. And I want to get to that little nugget about hearing loss and shame and embarrassment at some point. But let's get to the nuts and bolts of hearing loss and what are some of the common signs and symptoms.
So really just saying huh or what, asking for repetitions. A lot of times we hear patients say that, oh, my wife or my husband is talking from the other room and I just can't hear them. Well, you know, that might be a sign, it might not be, but you don't know until you get tested for that. But other things, you know, that patients often tell us that their significant others reporting that the TV is too loud, that the car radio is too loud. Sometimes people have hissing or buzzing in their ears. It's called tinnitus or tinnitus. It can be from hearing loss. Also getting upset when they're confronted about their hearing problems. You know, that could mean that maybe they are hearing, having some difficulty, but they don't want to admit it.
When they've been called on it, it's the first reaction.
Yeah.
Again, that I'm assuming that's some embarrassment or fear.
Yeah, it's emotional. It can be an emotional thing. It's even part of the grieving process is denial. The first step in grieving is exactly that. You don't want to admit you have a problem, but maybe you do.
And losing hearing is definitely worth grieving over.
I think so.
Yeah, because it keeps you in the moment, certainly, being able to hear.
There's so many wonderful things to listen to. Mm-hmm. And if I think about something in my life right now, you know, my daughter is just over 2 months old, and just being able to hear her coo for the first time, you know, if that was something I was missing, I would definitely be missing out on a lot of life right there.
Yeah. So if these sorts of things are happening, like TV's too loud, or turn it up, I can't hear it. Too loud meaning it's been left, someone else notices how loud it is because the person with possible hearing loss has turned it up that high. That's the scenario.
Exactly.
Then what would be the next step?
The next step is to find a hearing care professional. Usually I recommend seeing an audiologist, at least for the first time, because there are other avenues you can go to for hearing help. But an audiologist is one that's qualified to test your hearing and to help diagnose any other underlying problems. If there's something else, there's some red flags during testing, we can refer to a medical professional to help address the situation that way as well. Whereas, you know, if you go to a hearing aid dealer or just a store, you know, they might have some idea, and if they've had a lot of experience, they might be able to do the same thing, sure. But, you know, we are trained and qualified to do so right away, immediately. It's our first job is to look after hearing health. So see an audiologist.
All right. That makes perfect sense. So audiologists have basically the most education training behind you, and a technician may be trained in certain areas in the technology that they're able to bend or
exactly
or lend, but that makes sense. So that's a good first rule. Then find an audiologist to do that.
Can I add something
yes,
to the audiology?
Please.
So, you know, as audiologists, it's often you know, everybody usually thinks of audiologists as just hearing aids and, you know, testing hearing. Well, some audiologists help diagnose and treat balance disorders. Others deal with auditory processing disorders. We see those a lot in children, and you know, there are a lot of other things an audiologist can help look out for that, you know, maybe get thrown under the rug, because most of what we do to help patients on the day-to-day is advertise out there our hearing aids.
Yeah. That's a very good point. So there's the distinction. I'm just curious, since you mentioned children, how many do you have young patients?
So at our clinics, we do have the capability, but we don't typically see children too often. You know, most of the time, you know, like I said, we do have the capability, but I like them to go to somebody that is mostly trained in dealing with children. You know, they operate the same way as far as hearing aids and hearing testing, but those techniques to help fit the hearing aids or really to just test that patient might be a lot different, and they have trainings and interventions. They know the schedules that they need to be on. So we like to refer most of those patients to someone that's we feel is more qualified, and Children's is the place to go.
Children's Hospital.
Yes.
Yeah, here in Cincinnati. So what factors can play a part in loss of hearing besides just having headphones on very, very loud like George Zahn and I do here at the radio station? We're both a little concerned about our own hearing because of our sort of career-long need, I guess, from how he and I work, much louder headphone volume than the other folks that work here. So
some factors in hearing loss, you know, we all just want to hear it's probably just earwax. Well, that can be true. Sure, some earwax can block your ear. It has to be totally occluding for that to happen. But really, age is a factor. Long-term noise exposure for those working in factories or even military noise exposure. Just the everyday sound out there can help. Genetics can play a part. Diseases of the blood, because it has to do with the particular trying to figure out how to put this, but the, you know, the blood flow in the ear and how the ear is able to keep its health up.
Interesting.
If the, you know, the blood flow is not there, it's not getting the proper nutrients to maintain itself. So there are lots of other factors. There's medications like long-term IV antibiotics, cancer treatments, radiation, chemo. There are a lot of other factors in hearing loss. And just considering that every day we're bombarded with sound. You know, you step out of this building here, it's loud. The doors whoosh as you walk out. There's cars going by, sirens. You know, kids these days are listening to music louder and louder, and they have their headphones on all day. But TV, if you just think about all the media that's out there that we listen to every day, our ears never stop. Even when we're sleeping, they're always on.
It's true.
So there's always sound.
There's no ear lids like eyelids to give you a rest.
Exactly.
And I think, too, it's interesting that we've kind of gotten away as a society from being concerned about too much noise. There was a whole campaign in the 70s, and I think it was federally funded, about noise pollution. And there would be public service announcements on television and talk about keeping volume down on things. I think even legislation on things that, you know, like factories, the amount of noise output. But that sort of just disappeared, and there hasn't been talk of noise pollution really for a long time. But I sometimes myself imagine what it would be like if 150 years, 200 years ago, how quiet it would be if we weren't living in the society we do now. What would that sound like?
And you know, there are regulations in industries. There's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. Really helps to instill those in factories where things are loud. There's testing for that factory. They make sure they wear hearing protection. We do some OSHA testing where it's, you know, longitudinally test once a year to get a baseline hearing test and to see if the hearing's changed. They regulate how many earplugs somebody gets or to make sure that they're wearing them every day.
Okay. Yeah.
So there are regulations out there, and it's, you know, the audiology field is relatively small in comparison to something like primary care physicians. There are so many of them, but audiologists are definitely lesser in number. So it's harder for us to get the word out there.
That's a good point. Well, we're taking an opportunity here, 1 hour of trying to get the word out. We do have a call, Ryan.
Sure.
Hold on 1 second. I will. Eileen, you're on the air.
Yep, I'm here.
Great.
Gosh, you get me retired and I call in. I, as Robin knows, I have a hearing problem, but it's none of those things you mentioned as such. I got a virus. They don't know when I got it. And my first thing was, I didn't know I had a hearing problem. I just know that my ears were swishing and woo. And so I went to ear, nose, and throat doctor, and I took that as my first thing. not an audiologist because I didn't know I had a hearing problem. I mean, other than, you know, I didn't have anybody telling me. My cats could get my attention, so that was all that was necessary. But I will say I've gone back to where I'm not using my hearing aid as much because I'm going through treatment again, as Robin knows. And I really don't need to hear a whole lot right now, especially when people say, is that your daughter that's bringing you here?
Oh.
And it's my sister that's 4 years younger than me. So,
but you bring up an interesting point, because I know you were very proud of yourself when you started wearing those hearing aids after having left them in your, dresser drawer for how many months. But are you, I'm going to ask Ryan, I'm jumping in here, Eileen, because I'm wondering, you're not wearing them now. You've got a lot of other things going on. But what happens, Ryan, if someone is on again, off again with their hearing aids?
Well, you know, it's a transition period between wearing them and not wearing them. So, you know, you might not be doing any damage to your hearing, but you want to learn how to hear with the hearing aids. It's going to make things much easier. And I know you say you have a lot going on, but what better time to hear? You know, you want to make sure you can hear with those hearing aids and get those actual outside stimulation that you might otherwise be missing. And I'll commend you for going to an ENT first. That is great. An ENT is the next step that we refer people to if we see problems. And, you know, you don't always have to go straight to an audiologist, but I bet you in a case like yours, probably 3 out of 4 times you're going to get a hearing test, and that's probably by an audiologist that works with that ENT.
Yes, I did. It was through one of the hospitals here. And I'm very fortunate, and I think I still have this. I probably need to get a hearing test. But right now I'm going through cancer, so I'm getting treatments. And I have 3 more to go, and then I'll be off for 2 months. And I'm hoping then to get a few other little different doctor things in, like because when I got my hearing aid, I only need it once, and it was completely paid for with my insurance.
That's awesome.
I work for the federal government, and I'm able to keep that in my retirement, and I'm pretty sure it's probably still there. I'll have to check before, but I probably need to see the audiologist again,
to readjust
and see what's going on. But like I said, you know, I'm not out of the house much. If I am, I go do a little bit of shopping and that. And so I'm in close contact with people that I'm close to. And as I said, the one thing I get tired of hearing, and I just heard the other day at treatment, this older lady says to my sister, "Oh, that's so nice that you're taking your daughter to treatment." And I went, okay, folks.
Eileen, you have to get over that. You have to get over that.
I know, but I just tell them, well, you know, I've heard of 12-year-olds having kids, but not 4-year-olds, so. But anyway.
Well, I have a feeling that Ryan. Oh, go ahead.
This is going to encourage me again, after I had my last treatment in about 3 weeks, to call the audiologist and, you know, say, hey, you know, I think it's time to recheck, see how my hearing is. And see if I need to have my hearing aid adjusted and stuff and pull it back out of my purse and stick it back in.
Yes,
well,
ma'am.
Eileen, I have a feeling that Ryan would and could spend the next 40 minutes telling you why you should be putting those on right now instead of waiting till after all these appointments. And you might want to stop and think about that a little bit.
Well, here's the other situation, though. If I fall asleep with them in, which I've done, and that hurts after you keep them in 24 hours, which I don't think you're supposed to, and if I set it aside, then I forget it. So it's a case of when I remember it, I put it in. At home, the cats don't care how loud the TV is. Nobody else is around. And my sister, you know, I have noticed, though, like Wheel of Fortune. They'll say, I want a D, and I thought they said an E.
Well, you know, if you don't mind, I want to take your little scenario and have Ryan talk about a little bit.
That's fine.
Off.
And I'll get off and listen to you on the other side
okay.
of the radio.
All right, good. And thank you for
All
calling.
Right, take
Always
care.
Bring something to
Bye-bye.
The table, Eileen. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, what I was thinking was, here's a situation where, you know, like you said, well, what better time to be able to hear well when you have a lot going on?
Yeah, and you know, we hear that quite often. Oh, I don't, there's not a lot of noise for me to be around. The cats, like she said, exactly, the cats don't care how loud the TV is. Well, your neighbors, even if they're 30 feet away, they might still care, especially in a community like we're in right here. You know, it can be very bothersome to your neighbor. But that's not the main point. The main point is that, you know, to get acclimated to wearing this hearing aid sometimes can be difficult. So you don't want to, you know, go in and out of wearing it, because what happens when you put it in, there's little sounds that you probably forgot you heard before your hearing loss. For instance, the refrigerator running or the AC, you can hear the furnace or the AC blowing. Well, your hearing aid is going to help to pick those things out too. And that might be something that initially is bothersome. Well, everybody else that has normal hearing or somewhat normal hearing has learned to block those out. Unfortunately, you have to do that again. And, you know, there are certain hearing aid technologies that can really help with those types of things, but they're not all perfect, and especially with taking into consideration budgets and other things like that and the fit of the hearing aids in the ear and tons of other factors, you know, it's not always possible. So it's best just to try to train your brain to listen in every situation possible with that hearing aid, so that you're the most successful when you really, really need it. And that might not be on the TV, but that could be when you go to your next doctor's appointment.
I would think even there's safety issues involved too.
Sure.
Not hearing.
Yeah, so a big one there that we often discuss with patients, you know, we have a big question is, well, I have hearing loss in both ears, can I just wear one hearing aid to save some money? You can, but it's not going to be very beneficial to you. In noise, and then also for localizing sound, our ears and our brain use both sides to figure out where sounds is coming from. Exactly. So, for instance, I like to tell this story to my patients. If there are any of them out there listening that have recently been fit with hearing aids that have asked me this question, forgive me, but I like to go over this a lot because it can be a safety concern. Let's say you have hearing loss in both ears. Your ears are used to getting the same amount of stimulation while you're especially for localizing sound, you turn to the direction where the sound is louder. So let's say you put a hearing aid in your right ear, you walk out on the street, and you're not wearing one on your left, and a car comes from the left side, you're going to hear it on the right side, and you're going to turn the wrong way. And, you know, that could have some pretty detrimental effects. So I like to argue that wearing two hearing aids is always the best. That's a safety concern. And then in noise, we hear about 30, 40% better with both ears, because we're getting both information. We can help pick out where that sound is coming from and rule out sounds in other directions.
So there's a reason why we have two ears.
Exactly.
You know, I until Eileen mentioned I just have one, I never thought about whether you're normally prescribed two or just one. And how often might there be hearing loss in just one ear?
So I don't have an exact statistic, mm-hmm. but, you know, most often hearing loss is in both ears. It usually is symmetrical. When there are things that are not symmetrical, that's when we have red flags. In her case, she had a virus or, like she said, with her hearing, so that was something that
it
needed
just
to be medically
affected more
addressed.
One ear than just, the other.
Yeah, it just affected one. Some patients we see have strokes, can just be one ear. Other patients have noise trauma from shooting guns. One side has what we call a noise notch. You know, there are some occasions, but most often we see a symmetrical hearing loss. So hearing loss, it's the same on both sides.
And in most cases, if you see someone with just one aid, it could mean either that's just what they chose to wear for the ear that has the worst most degree of hearing loss, or it could be a situation like a virus or stroke, you said.
Sure. And, you know, oftentimes with hearing loss, especially certain degrees, there's so many different variables in here. But we actually, if you have hearing loss in both ears and there's one ear that's better than the other, if you're just going to go with one, we actually go with the better ear. It gives you the most chance at hearing the most you can.
Really?
It's pretty typical, yes.
Interesting. Well, it's new information to me and maybe to some others. That is interesting. When you are compensating, like you've got more hearing loss in one ear than the other, what kind of other issues can come up? You talked about safety, I guess, in that particular story about walking out in traffic and not hearing properly. But is that a good question, Ryan? I'm not sure.
I mean, kind of. So hearing loss compensation is the same,
okay.
Even if you're not wearing hearing aids, you know. But, you know, if you have one ear that's better than the other, you might be turning your ear in that direction, turning that particular ear closer to conversation, really just concentrating on what somebody's saying by looking at their mouth to see, you know, if you can pick out what they're saying to augment what you're hearing. Trying to get closer to that person. It's all about the same.
With
any type or form
point.
Of hearing loss, it's going to be fairly similar.
I can imagine a scenario where you've got your one hearing aid because you chose to go with one, or that's just the situation, and so you still have some hearing loss. You're not completely recovered, and you just go back into those same habits is basically what you're saying. Of things
Pretty
you
much.
May not even be conscious you're doing. I could see that easily where
oh,
you
yes.
don't realize, like, why does my neck hurt? Well, it's because I'm always turning my head to that side.
And then another thing, you know, your brain is going to give preference to that ear. Let's say you had an equal amount of hearing loss in both sides and you just amplified one ear. Well, you're going to be getting that outside stimulation from that side that you might not necessarily have been getting on either side. Well, now you're definitely not going to get it on the other side. You know, the volumes are going to be lower, and you're going to be receiving it on one ear. So that ear is going to be trained to hear better all the time. And you're not keeping that other ear afloat, essentially. So you want to always use both because that's going to give you the most help in every situation.
Is hearing loss just inevitable? Do we all just need to know that at some point we are going to deal with this?
That's a great, great question. And the answer really is no. You know, we have norms for hearing for a reason, and that even applies to someone that's 100 years old. For example, I had a grandmother, and, you know, my father is an audiologist. It was his mother. She was in her upper 80s when she passed from some heart trouble. And she didn't have a hearing loss. Well, my grandfather, who was, you know, much younger when he passed, started wearing hearing aids when he was 50 years old. So, you know, everybody is different. There's different degrees of hearing loss. Some people are more susceptible to others. And, you know, if you've lived a relatively quiet lifestyle your whole life, it's most likely you're not going to have a hearing loss if you don't have any other issues.
Mm-hmm.
For example, heart disease and high blood pressure and some other things that can come along with hearing loss or make you more susceptible to it.
And that gets us back to your comment earlier about blood flow, and that's the circulatory system. So I had never heard in the same conversation talking about heart disease and hearing loss and that they're tied to each other.
Yeah, they definitely can be. The ear is a very tiny, you know, it's one of our smallest structures, and is very dependent on a specific amount of nutrients in every category. You know, I'd have to have all my, you know, mm-hmm. former training in front of me to really dig deep into this. But, you know, it's a really true thing there because there are vascular systems in place to help maintain your ear in every situation.
Interesting. Well, are there some things that baby boomers, and I'm wondering too, baby boomers being now equally as large as millennials in terms of the population, but, you know, there are about 10,000 people a day in the United States turning 65, and is there anything that us boomers need to know? I had heard that getting a baseline hearing test is a good idea, and that certainly resonated, so to speak, with me because I thought, well, I'm a little concerned about some loss myself being in this business, and I wasn't sure where to start and whether that was something, why haven't I ever heard about from my primary care about getting a baseline hearing test? Is that for somebody, not me? But I have a feeling that I should probably do that.
Yeah, and, you know, we recommend this happen younger and younger, especially with the amount of noise that people are around all day. You know, we know with the millennials and even generations prior to
my generation, we were buying some pretty big speakers.
Yes, we have big speakers.
And listening on headphones to some very loud music, yes.
So the same goes for today, too, with all the media and earphones mm-hmm. and everything. So, you know, I would probably argue that I think we discussed before that maybe around 50 years old, it might be a good idea just to have a baseline. Even if you're not having trouble, go ahead and get checked. A lot of times, especially if you have a primary insurance before Medicare, you know, at 50, that's not available to you anyway. And most of the time, they'll pay for a hearing test. So go get it checked out. It's something that'll benefit you in the long run, especially if you do have a hearing loss. The earlier you start, the easier it's going to be to get acclimated to those types of situations. And, you know, before we go any further with that, if a person is a veteran, you know, they have the ability to get that taken care of for free if the VA can determine that any part of their hearing loss was due to military service, or even if they can't rule it out.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
They can have hearing aid benefits. They'll be able to get their hearing tested for free. We test veterans all the time through some third-party organizations just to help, you know, get those patients through the system so that if they do have a hearing loss, they can get taken care of.
So any veterans from any decade of service then have that opportunity.
I'm still seeing World War II patients.
Are you?
Which is, you know, they're getting up there these days.
Wow. Well, that's, I'm so glad you mentioned that. That's important, very important information. I'm hoping someone heard that for the first time, and they're going to be making some plans.
It's surprising to me how many haven't heard that. But anyway, even if, you know, you're a baby boomer or someone that just feels like maybe they have trouble hearing, mm-hmm. or maybe they don't, if you're just curious, go get a test.
And can you ask your primary care? Is that a good place to start? Or can you just call Hill Hear Better Clinic and set that up, call a clinic directly without?
Yeah, so these days you can call a clinic directly. Actually, at any day you probably could have done that. The only medical referrals that, you know, we needed in the past was for a hearing aid through insurance, but we actually don't need that anymore. So you can sign a waiver saying that you don't feel, well, actually the waiver has even been lifted as of last year, that, you know, you don't need to have medical oversight because I, the audiologist, am trained to refer you to someone. If you've come through someone like myself, you know, if we don't see a direct medical need, an immediate medical need, then it's, you know, you can go through with the process.
Good. Well, that's good to know, too. So that's even easier to get in and get that first hearing test. I'm speaking with Dr. Ryan Hill of the Hill Hear Better Clinic with three locations in the tri-state area. And we are live today on HealthScope talking about all things hearing. We're going to be talking about hearing aids and technology when we come back in just a minute. And don't forget, you can call in with your questions at 1-877-772-9658 if you're streaming us live today and would like to call toll-free, or 513-772-9658, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from the Cincinnati Music and Wellness Coalition, promoting healthy lifestyles through evidence-based recreational music, making wellness programs for older adults, caregivers, youth, individuals recovering from substance abuse, and many other populations. Information at musicandwellness.net.
The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program or of WMKV Radio, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS Radio, the Lakota Local School District, or its staff or management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific professional advice.
Welcome back. HealthScope live today on WMKV and WLHS. I'm Robin Carrial-Geyer, and you can call and ask your questions of Dr. Ryan Hill today. He is with Hill Hear Better Clinic. And let's talk about hearing aids. We've been talking about a lot leading up to that point, I guess, when hearing aids may be recommended for someone. And how does a hearing aid work anyway?
So a hearing aid is actually pretty complex. You know, in the past, we just had sound come into a microphone, it was amplified, and then pushed back out through a receiver or a speaker. These days, sound comes into the hearing aid through the microphone, it gets pre-amplified, then it goes through an actual analog-to-digital converter to switch to digital sound so we can process it using a microprocessor, so essentially a mini-computer. And then it gets amplified again. Well, let me take one step back. Mm-hmm. It goes back from a digital to analog signal, amplified back through a receiver into the person's ear. So the hearing aid is essentially a mini computer you're wearing, or sound processor.
Interesting. And they are getting smaller and smaller.
Smaller,
right?
And smaller. Yeah, I mean, every day, hearing, well, every year they come out with a smaller product. And, you know, sometimes they actually start to get a little bigger. We've seen some of the smaller hearing aids increase in size because of rechargeability options that we have
these days.
So,
okay.
You know, there's only a certain point so far that, you know, the hearing aid can get down to, but they are very tiny these days. They can be.
And are they self-adjustable?
So
nowadays, because I'm only mentioning this, again, out of personal experience with a dear friend who has hearing loss, and oftentimes she'll stop me mid-sentence and go, wait a minute, you know, and she'll adjust a little bit. Sometimes she gets a little feedback, and that may be an older type of hearing aid, but what is going on there in that scenario?
So what she might be doing is either turning up or down the volume. She can be changing programs. You know, there are different programs we can set up in the hearing aid to have different acoustical settings so that they can process the sound differently. Some of the hearing aids can even do what's called beamforming and really focus in on sound in front of the person instead of behind. It doesn't completely get rid of that sound behind, but it really can help hone in certain situations and give a higher signal-to-noise ratio, which really benefits a lot of people, most people, actually. But also, you know, if she's getting some feedback and she's doing some adjusting, maybe she's turning down the volume, or maybe she's just pushing her hearing aid in a little further.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing
mm-hmm.
aid might not be properly fitting in her ear.
Okay, okay. Now, tell us a little bit about the latest. You started down that road, little mini computers, basically.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you're seeing down the road that what will helping folks with hearing loss look like in the future?
So, you know, they always make more and more advances every year. I mean, a new hearing aid product probably comes out every 6 months. It might even be more than that. Every manufacturer is striving to be the best. They want to have the most patients in their, you know, in their products. So the biggest thing these days, and it's still a constant complaint, even with the best technology, is hearing and noise. And in my opinion, that probably is never going to be perfect because sound and speech is so complex. How can a hearing aid and microprocessor really pick that out? Our brains can do it, but we have billions of neurons in our brain. There's not billions of, you know, connections in this hearing aid. But they're getting better and better, so maybe one day that will get better.
And repeat again the issue.
The issue is trouble hearing and background noise.
Hearing and background noise.
Yes.
Okay. So in other words, the background noise feeds in. That volume goes up along with what you want to hear.
Yeah, and not always. There are some hearing aids that do a lot better than others.
Filtering
out the background noise, hearing that it's there, and bringing out the speech. But what happens is a hearing aid typically has to, you know, relieve that signal. It has to reduce that background noise. Well, what happens is the hearing aid is processing on so many certain little channels that it also has to take out the speech where it's at. So with the speech, they have to build the speech back in. So it's up to that hearing aid to really pick out where it's seeing it. It's kind of hard to understand without looking at a graphic. I mean, you might be better at most because you're in the radio business with sound, and you might have a better understanding than some others, but, you know, a hearing aid has some big trouble to get that sound back in. And like I said, some do it fairly well, though, these days.
Interesting. Well, we have another caller.
Sure.
Lydia, thanks for calling today. You have a question or a story for Dr. Hill?
I have a question. I was listening to the program about how you should probably get your hearing checked if you say, huh, or you have trouble hearing sometimes or play the TV too loud. And I have a medical condition where I develop tumors, and I'm wondering if perhaps I have a tumor on my inner ear because I fall down and I do the huh and play the TV loud. And I wanted to ask the doctor, what would be my next approach? Should I come automatically to you for an exam, or should I see an ENT? I'm just kind of curious now that I've heard your program. I'm like, this is interesting.
Great question. And, you know, that may be a need for immediate attention. So you can seek the help of an audiologist. For instance, you could come see us, and we can give you your baseline hearing test, and we can refer you to an ENT. But, you know, if you have an ENT or a group of doctors that you work with the most, you know, for example, like a TriHealth or Christ Hospital or something, they probably have one in your network that has an audiologist that works with them, and they can take care of all of it, hopefully, at once in the same day. So get in to see an audiologist. You're going to have a hearing test no matter what. But, yeah, get in to see somebody like that.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I have one more question.
Sure.
What would be some of my, like, options if there is, like, a tumor? I mean, if you could answer that, like, would I have to have it removed, or could I, you know, learn to live with it? Just, I mean, get used to falling down?
I wish I could.
Or saying, ha.
Yeah, I wish I could answer that for you, and it's not really in my scope of practice as an audiologist, so I would refer you to an ENT for that one.
Okay. All right. Well, you've been very helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks,
Lydia,
for calling me. Good luck to you.
Yeah, take care of yourself. I'm so glad you called, and that maybe you've got at least a next step that you can take, and be careful.
Well, thank you for the program, and thank you for having Dr. Hill, because I would have continued to ignore these had I not heard the program.
Well, I'm glad you called.
Yeah,
and
makes
in.
Us feel very good to hear that. Stay in touch, too.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Lydia.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
What worries me about Lydia's comment is the falling down, which you mentioned a little bit at the very beginning about vertigo can be something that related to hearing loss.
Yeah, so our ear and our inner ear is comprised of two different, you know, organ. It's the same organ, but, you know, houses two different functions. So balance and also hearing. And our balance section of our inner ear and our hearing section actually share a similar fluid. So if there's trouble with one, there's oftentimes trouble with the other. Also with what Lydia was speaking of, you know, with her inner ear, a tumor on the inner ear can be a cavity in the inner ear or a tumor in the cavity on the nerve. But the balance and hearing nerve are actually all grouped together at that point. You know, there's separate sections of it, but it's all in the same space. So if it's pushing on one part of the nerve, it can be pushing on the other right there. And she could, that could be what's possibly wrong with her.
Well, let's hope that she takes care of herself and makes that call today. And because if you are feeling like you're unbalanced or your balance is off and you're noticing a difference, then that is a call to action to make a phone call to a doctor, sounds
exactly.
to me.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Because
immediate need.
The falls are just the scariest thing when you get older. Ryan, you're too young. But falling is traumatic when you get older, period, because when you're a kid, you fall all the time. And then you fall when you're over 40 and you tell the world, I fell today. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it can be scary.
Very scary, yes.
I hear that quite often.
Well, I'm so glad Lydia heard the program today. We are taking calls. We are live until 2 o'clock, and you're listening to HealthScope. Ryan Hill is here, Dr. Ryan Hill, audiologist with Hill Hear Better Clinic, three different locations here in Cincinnati to serve you, and our phone number, 513-772-9658. How can folks prevent hearing loss? Is there anything? You've already told us it isn't inevitable, so there must be some things we can do to limit the damage to our ears.
Sure. You know, really it's just wearing hearing protection when you feel like there's going to be a loud noise. You know, most of us today probably have cut the grass at some point. Some lawnmowers are louder than others, but, you know, a general rule of thumb, if you have to speak up to get someone to hear you or to hear yourself, you probably need hearing protection at that point. You know, OSHA has come up with some rules about how much noise you can be in for a certain amount of time at what level. And those guidelines, you know, for the average person probably don't really pertain too much, but because we're not in that much noise. But really, you know, in concerts, protect your hearing. If you go to, especially rock and roll concerts, keep the volume down in your car stereo. Wear hearing protection when you're using power tools or things of that nature.
Where do you get earplugs?
So
what should they look like? Or is there a certain brand, I suppose? Because I imagine you could spend very little money and you could spend a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a very great question. And, you know, oftentimes the simplest and cheapest one are the most effective. So those little foam, what we call EAR plugs, they're the cheapest option out there, and they offer some of the best attenuation that you can get as long as they're properly placed. And that just means making sure they're in your ear far enough to give your ear more of a blockage.
Okay.
But we offer custom hearing protection. We offer shooters plugs, musicians plugs. There's some with different filtering levels, different attenuations. We often have seen certain bands for their, you know, in-ear monitors while they're on stage. So not only can they hear themselves, but they're protecting their hearing. So there are lots of options out there.
But you can start by just going to a local drugstore and finding a basic foam earplug.
You got it.
Okay. And with mowing season coming up, probably a good idea.
I agree.
And we're just noisy. It's a noisy society. My goodness, we make a lot of noise.
Sure
we
do.
We just don't even think about it anymore. I live on the CSX train track, right there. My front yard just goes right up to the street, in between the sidewalk and a narrow street, and there's the train. And you do get used to it. Some days it seems a little louder than others, I guess, but, after 20-some years living on the tracks, I have no doubt that it's affected hearing, especially when you're working outside. It can be amazing, because you have to stop talking. And our neighbors, we all chuckle because we know very well how to stop mid-sentence, and we know when the last horn is blasted, then we can resume our conversation, and we do it without even blinking. But that's the kind of chronic loud noise that really should be protecting ourselves from.
Yeah, especially those trains can be very, mm-hmm. very loud with those horns. I don't even know, but I would imagine they're over 110, 115 mm-hmm. decibels, and that's something that can cause immediate hearing loss.
Immediate hearing loss.
And sometimes, you know, it can be a temporary hearing loss for, you know, an immediate temporary hearing loss, and our ear might recover. But what's been shown these days, something that's a little bit more recently researched, is what's called hidden hearing loss. So someone might test in the normal range when we test for, you know, just our basic hearing test, but they might be experiencing trouble in background noise. So it's a hard way to get...
Is that the cookie effect? I've heard something called the cookie effect.
There's a bite hearing loss.
Yes, cookie bite, where sort of the middle range is missing.
Not exactly.
Okay.
Because so what we have as part of our ear, you know, our sensory organs of our ear are actually these little tiny microcilia housed in our inner ear. So we have three parts to our ear. Would it be useful to talk about that?
Yeah.
So the ear works, sound travels in the ear canal. And that helps to filter sound. Our outer ear, the pinna, actually helps filter in higher frequency sounds in the speech range. And then our ear canals each have a specific resonance based on the anatomy that we have that also helps filter speech. So sound is filtered in through the outer ear. Then it hits the eardrum, which starts a mechanical motion of the ear. And that sets three other bones in place. We call it, well, you might have heard the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup. It's mm-hmm. hard for me to remember those because... It's, you know, the malleus, incus, and the stapes.
Okay, right.
But our inner ear bones, called the ossicles, the smallest bones in our body, they continue this mechanical transduction of sound, and that actually amplifies sound, and then it pushes a fluid wave through our cochlea. And inside our cochlea, it looks like a little snail shell. We have 30,000 of these microcilia that move back and forth, kind of like seagrass in the ocean. In response to these waves. And when they bend over, what happens is an electrical signal is caused because of a polarization in the cell, and that charges an electric signal all the way to the brain. It's a little bit more complex than that, but that's the basic function. So what happens is those sensory cells can become temporarily damaged, and until they have time to repair, which could be over a couple of hours or even a couple of weeks, what happens is you kind of lose your hearing. Sometimes that can be permanent with sounds that are loud enough, such as if you had your ear right next to that train horn, probably would be no coming back from that. But in other instances, that sensory cell recovers. Well, because of that system overload, there's so much sound that comes through and through that nerve cell that's attached, because right in our inner ear, the auditory nerve is attached at millions and millions of places. But that signal can be so complex and so dense that and actually causes the myelination or the insulation of that nerve cell to deplete, or even the nerve cells themselves. So if you think about a pixelated TV, one with all the, you know, I wouldn't say salt and pepper because that's a little bit, you know, dated these days, but on our flat screens, if you start to see black dots, that picture is becoming less clear. That's kind of how the ear works in those types of situations. So the sensory cell might recover, but that nerve cell might not ever recover.
Interesting. And thus, situations like with our veterans who have been in combat, an explosion that could permanently damage, or back in the day, coming back from a crazy concert with high volume, your ears ring for 2 or 3 days and you can't hear.
Yeah, and some of those veterans, I mean, and other people as well, have constant ringing all the time. That never goes away.
And that's got to be just a horrible condition to have to try to live with. Now, is that the tinnitus or tinnitus that you mentioned earlier, ringing or hissing or buzzing in the ear?
Yeah, so tinnitus or tinnitus are the two most common ways. Sometimes I hear tendonitis, which makes me laugh because that's tennis elbow.
Yeah, but that's a little, you know, that's something different.
People have the right idea, yeah. But we always get a nice little chuckle from that. But anyway, tinnitus or tinnitus, ringing, buzzing, hissing, clicking, anything like that, any extraneous sound in your, well, it's not exactly extraneous, but, you know, any extra sound in your ear that's not there and quiet. So loud noises can cause it, but there's, you know, damage to the inner ear can cause that. Hearing loss can cause it. Medications can cause it. High levels of stress. For myself, I get a really bad ringing in my left ear only when I have too much caffeine.
Huh.
So that's how I know I have enough every morning.
Yeah.
But for instance, there are lots of different causes. There's no known exact cause. There are some that have been correlated to it. For instance, what we've just talked about. Mm-hmm. And there's no known exact cure for it.
What do you do at the clinic if someone comes in and they're diagnosed with this tinnitus?
So the first thing we do is a full diagnostic hearing evaluation. We want to know if you have a hearing loss or not. We need to rule that out. If you don't have a hearing loss, you know, not only do we need to figure out some type of treatment, but we need to figure out a holistic plan. Sometimes it even involves seeking someone in the psychological department, you know, a therapist to help someone deal with the negative, you know, effects or emotions that tied with that tinnitus if it's bad enough. Other times people just live with it and there's not a lot you can do.
Interesting. But I guess it's best to know what you're dealing with instead of just...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we
find
that, you know, if you have tinnitus and you have a hearing loss, you know, a lot of times just bringing in that outside stimulation can really help.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main theories is that you're not hearing what's from the outside. So your brain is just trying to fill in the gap. It's producing its own feedback signal. And, you know, it's only measurable a little bit under a functional MRI, but who gets those on a regular basis? So it's different for everyone anyway.
How interesting. Now, the brain has come up a lot today, and I mean, it's no surprise, talk about anything in the body the brain isn't connected to in some way, but it's been fascinating to hear how the brain compensates for things and just how complex alone this amazing organ, the ear, is and what's inside. It's fascinating. You did an excellent job of explaining in layman's term, painting the picture. Really, I could picture the whole structure here and imagining all those little cilia and all the work they have to do on a regular basis. They're working right now.
Constantly.
Yes,
we can actually measure their work. Part of newborn test hearing screening these days is measuring what's called otoacoustic emissions. And what that is, the ear actually is producing its own sound that's measurable inside the ear canal. And with people with hearing loss, we don't often measure those, but it is something that happens, and it's from the outer and inner hair cells of the inner ear.
Fascinating. Now, in the minutes that we have left, it's about 5 minutes before the top of the hour. If there's a caller, you have time to get in one quick question or story, 772-9658. But I wanted to talk a little bit about why so many folks resist going down this road to wearing, you know, a device that can augment in their hearing and improve their life.
Yeah, and there are lots of different setbacks for hearing aids and hearing help. One that's been so long has been the stigma because, you know, they might have seen their grandfather wear a hearing aid in the past with this giant, what we call a beige banana, this big, ugly hearing aid that's whistling all the time. You know, that's something there. Or feeling like you have a disability, because hearing loss can be a disability. It can be disabling. It really is labeled as such. So, you know, a lot of people don't want to feel that way. There are a lot of emotions tied to just that. Other factors are cost. You know, hearing aids and hearing healthcare can be expensive, especially if you get to someone, you know, well, maybe we shouldn't go too far down. We don't have a lot of time, but, you know, it can be expensive to upkeep these hearing aids. It's a big investment to make, and some people don't want to spend the money. You know, and other times it's just straight denial. They don't feel they have a hearing loss, and it's up to someone else in their family to really push them to get there.
But at the end of the day, that person has to want to do something.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
And Medicare still does not cover, is this correct, hearing aids?
Medicare does not cover hearing aids, and as far as I know, it covers one hearing loss or one hearing test in a lifetime, unless there's medical need. So you can get an ENT referral, but
okay, good information.
It can be difficult to do so in a timely manner, and you know, a lot of extra insurance or, you know, I can't think of
secondary insurance.
There we
go. Yes.
Yeah, sometimes they pick it up anyway. So.
Mm-hmm. So worth exploring all those possibilities and not just saying, I'll never be able to afford it, because there may be an opportunity.
Yeah, and even if you can just sit down, you know, somewhere and get a free hearing screening or a free hearing exam for somewhere, at least you'll have an idea.
Yeah. Yeah, you could start to make a plan that way. So important, because it does so affect so much of your overall health. And your psyche as well, and make your family much happier if you can hear.
That's for sure.
I've been speaking with Dr. Ryan Hill. He's with Hill Hear Better Clinic. He and his father, among other audiologists, run this clinic. And where are your locations again, Ryan?
So we have one in Finneytown, and one in Montgomery, and one in Batesville, Indiana.
And those locations could be found, directions, et cetera. What is your website?
It's hillhearbetter.com. So Hill, our last name is Hill, HillHearBetter.com.
And you've got some good resources on that website as well. And if you have been listening and thinking maybe that baseline test is, it's time to have that, join me. I will announce when I get mine. It is time. I'm going to do it. And if you have interest in, you only heard part of the program, you'd like to catch the whole thing, you can do that on Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. We'll replay the entire HealthScope from today, and you can also listen to it as a podcast. We'll have that up later this week at WMKVFM.org. Ryan Hill, Dr. Ryan Hill with Hill Hear Better Clinic, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
I learned a lot. I learned a lot. Appreciate you being here. Thanks so much. You're listening to HealthScope on the Maple Knoll Radio Network. You've been listening to HealthScope on WMKV and WLHS, and streaming around the world at WMKVFM.org. Join us each week at this time for a discussion of the latest in medical technology issues and topics on 89.3 WMKV, 89.9 WLHS, and online at WMKVFM.org.